Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks, asking the question, why wait for heaven? On 1-2 Radio, changing the way we experience life and spirituality. Today is September 25th, 2015. Today on A Course in Miracles, I'm excited to welcome back author Susan Dugan. Today, Susan and I will be discussing Lesson 131 from the ACIM Workbook for Students, No One Can Fail Who Seeks to Reach the Truth. And I love this lesson and I love the surrounding lessons, but particularly because one of my favorite phrases is in this lesson, Why Wait for Heaven? In looking at this lesson, we decided it was way too much material to discuss in an hour. So we will start the discussion today, but we've already agreed that we're going to finish that discussion next week. So I hope you'll come back and finish it up with us. Many of you are familiar with Susan Dugan, and maybe you've even read one of her three books, Extraordinary Ordinary Forgiveness, and Forgiveness Offers Everything I Want, and her latest book, Forgiveness, The Key to Happiness. She is a co-founder of the School of Reason for A Course in Miracles, and she facilitates ACIM study groups in Denver, Colorado. As you're listening to the show today, I hope you will join us in the 1-2 Radio chat room on Facebook. And if you're new to the show, thank you for joining us today, and I'm glad that you were able to find us. The easiest way to get to that private group is to go to our regular website, 12radio.com, and on the left side of the page, you will see a chat button. And when you click it, you'll automatically be redirected to Facebook, where you can ask to join the group. So I will see you over there. Good morning, Susan.
Hi, Sid.
Hey, thank you so much for suggesting this lesson.
You're welcome. We'll see.
Well, I think great minds, you know, run along the, you know, the similar tracks because it's been interesting. I've been talking to Bruce as well, and he really wanted to do lesson 133, you know, so we're going to be doing that one. And then I started reading lesson 131 and realized, oh, let's go back to 128 and 129 and 30 and, oh, look at 132. And it's like they're all just so exciting. But I thought it was interesting that literally within a week or so of each other, you both suggested, you know, lessons that were two apart. So I thought, okay, there's a theme here. There's something going on.
Right. And they are, you know, when you go back to the workbook, you see that there really is a masterful progression to these lessons of, you know, each one really does build on the previous one.
Yeah, they really do. And I think in this section, especially because he's really giving it to a, you know, very clear and very hard here, you know, about there is no world. You know,
yeah,
so many of those ideas, and he kind of builds on it. You know, I love that idea. This world holds nothing that you want, but by the way, there is a world that, where you do want, you know, so he doesn't just leave us hanging. And truthfully, I remember exactly when I read those lessons for the first time. I mean, I remember where I was, I remember the exact feeling. Because all of a sudden it's like, this world holds nothing that you want. And I just kind of, you know.
Yeah, I remember that too. And there was that, you know, just good sound effect because it is that kind of, you know, almost like it leaves us breathless almost because what the heck does that mean for me, you know?
Right.
And you know, there is it even says in those two lessons, the next lesson, you know, that the reason that there has to be a next lesson beyond this world, there is a world I want, is because we would be left in despair.
Yes, and exactly. And like I said, I remember exactly where I was in the moment I read that first lesson. And then I don't remember truthfully whether or not I read ahead to see what the next lesson was. But I do remember when I read the next lesson, I'm like, oh, okay, thank God.
Yeah. I mean, yes, thank God. And then yet, as we go on with the course, you know, and we realize where this is really leading, which is back to the mind and away from our identification with the body, you know, that's where the real, like, comes. Because
yes, but you know, it still kind of does when I read these lessons. It's not as impactful as the first time I read it, but still it's like, oh yeah, oh yeah.
It's very, right, because we... You know, we can't skip the step where we're at for a long time, usually, like, you know, decades perhaps, in which we're really you know, we're not ready to apply this in every situation to every thing in our hierarchy of illusions, this practice of forgiveness. And, you know, we still want to make certain things in our dream very real. They feel very real, and we're not in touch with the part of us that is deeply invested in keeping the dream going. And so, you know, we feel that we're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place, where we just, you know, that we're somehow, we feel victimized by the course. And actually, that's why I wanted to consider lesson 131 today, because I was sort of in one of those states the last couple weeks again, where, you know, it's like, this just seems impossible, you know? And lesson 131 again is, no one can fail who seeks to reach the truth. And so it's a very encouraging lesson, and yet it really does get at our resistance. You know, it shows us that we're always trying to put this out in front of us somewhere and make it impossible to get there. You know, we're not aware that that's something that we're setting up, and we're, because we're not in touch with that secret fear, you know, that this will, basically, we're not in touch with the idea that we made it up. We're not in touch with the guilt in our mind, directly with the guilt in our mind over the belief that we pushed love away. And all we're left with is the sort of nagging awareness of guilt and a belief that nothing works, you know, and we keep trying to find something to substitute for that love in our world, and something and trying to make something work, make something of myself.
Yes.
And you know, we strive and strive and strive to make our lives work out in form. And ultimately that is, you know, it is set up for lives ultimately not to work out, in the sense that, at least in the sense that, you know, it's very temporary at best, and inevitably it doesn't end well, you know. And so we feel like this lesson talks about the idea of why wait for heaven, he says.
Which, you know, is one of my favorite lines.
love that line, and that, you know, that implies, and the truth is that we're making a very present decision to keep ourselves in hell, in the hell of our own thought system of seeking but never finding. And yet we're not really aware of that. And there's a sense, there's such a deep sense of unworthiness within us, that over that belief that we really were able to, you know, we deserve punishment for what we did of separating from God and pushing real love away, and destroying heaven, you know,
mm-hmm.
our fantasy. And so that unworthiness, you know, usually results in us, or can result in us, trying to constantly purify ourselves, to make ourselves worthy, you know, to somehow, well, you know, if I do this, this, and this, then I'll be ready to, you know, accept Jesus as my teacher.
Yeah, right.
You know, let me take care of like some of these problems first. Let me take care of improving this self, you know, let me take care of all of my flaws in form, and try to make myself worthy, you know, somehow of this. And when the truth is that, you know, Jesus doesn't care what we're doing in form. I mean, he's not judging us for any of the things we do to try to satiate the hunger we have for, you know, for our longing. You know, we're constantly trying to fill this sense of scarcity and lack, and we're going about it in all the wrong ways. But you know, he's aware that that's inevitable, given what we believe. And so, you know, I mean, this lesson is all about, you know, you can take my hand right now, and we can look at this differently. I mean, heaven is right now. Heaven is in the eternal present. And you know, let's take a look at where you're investing yourself here, and all the things that you think will make you worthy, will make you okay, will make you you know, feel better. And how are they working out for you? You know, and let's see that this is really a choice that you're making here. You know, I was saying to you before we got on the phone that there's a line in paragraph 2 of this lesson that really jumped out at me this last time I read it. And it says, you look for safety and security while in your heart you pray for danger. You know, so we have to begin to see that there's a part of us that really has set it up this way.
Right. And you know what? I think you've hit upon a couple of things that I've had conversations with other people this week about. And that is because we don't want to believe, you know, when we start talking about, oh, we separated from God and we feel guilty, they're like, what? I don't think that ever happened. I don't remember that. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't feel that way. And that's it. We don't get it. You know, and in fact, I was listening to something Ken was saying, and he said, you know, the equivalent of we shouldn't take Jesus's hand or ask for another teacher to help us deny or change our feelings. We should be asking for him to help us expose our thoughts and feelings because we don't get them. We don't know that they're there. And, you know, directing to something else you said about we want to be worthy, I think the other thing that we tend to do is think, okay, well, I want to do all the fun stuff before I start getting spiritual, you know, because once I start doing the miracles, boy, there's no more brownies or there's no more, you know, whatever we're doing for recreation,
yeah.
You know, and that's not true either. Neither of those things is true. We don't have to wait because nothing is going to be taken away from us.
Right, right. And I mean, you're very right that Jesus, you know, the ego survives in concealment. So the remedy for the ego's thought system is to bring it to the light, you know, and that's really what we're asking. The emphasis on looking in A Course in Miracles with Jesus, you know, looking with a different teacher, is really looking at the ego, really looking at what we're doing. We have to expose that we're not feeling that this is not, that the brownies aren't solving the problem.
Right.
Education is not solving the problem, but also that the, you know, the pain in my jaw that I was, you know, I've been having all these pains and, you know, bodily pains lately. So last week it was all about my back, you know,
yes,
or the last couple of weeks. And then that got resolved. And then this week, you know, I woke up with like pain in my jaw and I had had an injury years ago and I have TMJ but you know, that hasn't been a problem, but now it's like, is it a toothache? Is it this? I have to, you know, it serves to distract us. And, you know, again, it's not about the form of what's going on. It's about, you know, that a part of us wants to create danger, as this is saying, you know, wants to be constantly running away from Jesus. And the way that we begin to see that is to look at what we're doing and to become very sensitive to how we're feeling about it, the misery that this is bringing us, because that's what's going to motivate us to actually begin to look at it, to look at it with Jesus and say, I don't want this anymore.
Right.
You know?
Well, and that sentence that you read, I mean, that's one thing too. I mean, what clicked in my mind is the people who say to me, oh, this is just crazy talk. You know, this doesn't make any sense at all. And that's the kind of thing that happens when you read that lesson. What do you mean I want danger? Why would I want danger? No, I want security. And yet what this lesson is really drilling down is, no, you don't. Because if that's what you wanted, you would be activating or you would be nurturing behaviors or thought systems that created peace. But look at your life. That's not what you're doing. And I think it's a hard thing to accept because, of course, we want to, you know, the ego side wants to keep pushing it and pushing it. But, you know, we don't have to look far to know that that's exactly what we're doing. And I think I would go so far as to say, I would kind of challenge anybody to say, have you not ever felt really good when somebody got punished? Have you not really felt really good when something really did fall apart? Because it's like, you said it was going to fall apart and you want it to fall apart. You know, it's that dogfight mentality all over again. We somehow really like it. You know, we get satisfaction out of making other people guilty because we think it makes us innocent. And so in our heart of hearts, we are looking for danger. We say we're looking for security. We say we're looking for peace, but we're harboring all these other thoughts in our deepest psyche.
Right, right. And that's right, because that's what holds the whole dream together, you know.
Yes.
I mean, if I'm, you know, I really did accomplish this separation from God, but I have somebody else to blame it on. I can deny responsibility for it, you know, because look at what they're doing to me. You know, look at all these things that have happened to me. And you know, and you're right. We have a huge adrenaline rush when a new problem, when a new tragedy occurs, you know. And I mean, and of course, you know, we're usually very out of touch with that because we're so good at projecting onto other people that we think it has nothing to do with us. We've denied responsibility for it completely. And the course is beginning to get us to start to associate, you know, our decision for separation and separate interests with our feelings. the ego thought system, the ego is so sneaky that, you know, there really is only one emotion, and that's guilt. But we are experiencing it in all these other forms. And so we say, I don't feel guilty. You know, what do I have to feel guilty about it? It's them. You know, it's this, it's that, it's my body, it's whatever. And
right. And that's an important point, too, that we don't only just project it onto other people. We project it onto our bodies. Just like, you know, you're saying, I got a pain here, I got a pain there. You know, it's like we recruit anything and everything to keep, you know, asserting our independence and our innocence.
Right. Absolutely. And it's the same, you know, our bodies are also a projection and something
yes.
we project on constantly. And usually, and Ken always talked about this, too, what, you know, usually if we're, as we become more and more self-aware through this process of what we're doing, you know, we begin to see that even when we are experiencing something as attacking our, you know, within our own body, we're blaming it on something. We're blaming it on, you know, it's the disease, it's the microbe, it's the
germ. Yeah.
I caught on the plane, you know, from somebody else sitting next to me. But
the DNA.
It's my DNA. Or and often, you know, we're projecting it quite literally onto people that we live with. You know, look at the pain in the neck that you are, you know.
Yeah.
Look at the headache you gave me. Or this job is giving me, or you know, whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you know, it's or we're pointing a finger to our past, you know, I was so damaged. And that's the way, you know, that's why I can't do whatever and ever, you know, because of what happened to me, either psychologically or physically in my childhood or in the womb or whatever. So, you know, so it's always about, you know, the ego's agenda of I exist, I really do exist at God's expense, but it's not my fault. And so, you know, related to this lesson, we say we long for heaven. I mean, there's a part of everyone here that is, you know, desperately longing to go home. And yet at the same time, not now.
Right. Not now. I don't want to push that button yet.
I don't want, that's right. You know, and yeah, Gloria in her classes apparently used to, or had said at one point, you know, if you had a button and you could instantly awaken. You know, would you want to, how many people would want to push it and nobody raised their hand?
Yeah.
You know? And so it's, you know, I mean, if we're really deeply honest with ourselves and the process of this is a training in becoming really honest and conscious of what we're doing and honest with ourselves and honest with our teacher, you know, that's really part of the process. It's, you know, Jesus, I don't want the course's answer, you know? I want this world. I want to try to make it work here. And it's much better, I think, to be honest about that and admit that and talk it over with your inner teacher than it is to try to deny it and say, I don't feel guilt. I don't feel, you know, I just want to go home. And when in truth, we're projecting like crazy, you know, because that just keeps it again in concealment. So, you know, we can't skip the step. We don't need to indulge this, and we should try not to indulge it, but we really can't skip the process and skip where we're at. On the other hand, we can stop a moment and step back at any time and say, you know, this is hurting me. I really don't want it. And that doesn't mean we're going to achieve instant results necessarily. Results meaning we instantly feel joyful or something. But it does mean that we're beginning to reverse the process. We're beginning to withdraw our belief, however slowly, in this thought system that is really the only thing, our belief in which is the only thing that's keeping us, you know, enslaved and unhappy and feeling constantly vulnerable to, you know, to, I mean, this world is endlessly, endlessly assaulting, you know, I mean, it really is. And, or tantalizing us, you know, as you were saying before, tantalizing us with some kind of promise of salvation. And the Course isn't saying that we, you know, trying to take our pleasures away, but it is trying to say, don't take them seriously, because is that what you would trade for heaven? Is that, that's, if this is not your salvation, it will pass. And, you know, that adrenaline rush that substitutes for happiness, joy in the dream, pleasure in the dream, is really, you know, if we believe the body can give us that kind of pleasure, we also believe it can give us pain, because that's the thought system.
Yeah. Well, and in fact, I don't know exactly where, but at least once it says, you know, what do you mean giving up pleasure? There are no pleasures in the world. If you really examine what it is, it's equally unhappiness as much as happiness.
And there's always a dark underbelly.
Yes, there always is.
Yes. And I mean, that's the thing that you do. And that's what this practice of, you know, that begins, we are first introduced to in the workbook, of beginning to question what's raised to doubt the cause of our, of what we're reacting to, and entertain the possibility that there might be another way to look at this, that, you know, and we're beginning to separate the idea of peace, you know, true peace of mind, which is stable, from the completely unstable world that we seem to experience as bodies. And you know, as we begin to look at that and be honest about it and look within ourselves and look with our inner teacher at this, that's what begins to you know, it actually heightens our discomfort with what we're doing. And that's what's going to, I mean, Jesus needs us to do that, because that's what's going to motivate us more and more to choose the peace of God, you know?
Right. And, you know, I want to tell you this story. I don't know if I ever have, but I thought about it when I read this lesson, and he was talking about, I say he, but the lesson or the teacher is telling us about the nature of this world and that it's just never going to be what we want it to be. And that is, years ago, I was on a committee and we were sending out a flyer to literally thousands of people. And somebody had gotten, they were just like multi-page, and we were going to fold them over, you know, do this trifold, and then put this sticker on it, you know, to seal it. And so anyway, as we were doing that and we were making piles and piles of these, we noticed they were all opening up. They weren't staying stuck together. And so we examined the labels and realized that they were those removable stickers. You know, so very much like the, you know, now I can't think of what you call, but you know what I'm talking about. The stickers that you can put, you know, we use them all the time, Stick-It notes. And so anyway, they were never going to stick, because they were removable labels. But this is what's funny is, of course, we're disappointed because we've now folded hundreds of these and they're all coming apart and we're trying to figure out what to do, because we really didn't want to staple them. We wanted to have this nice seal on them. Well, but this is what's funny. One person in the group said, well, maybe if we just push harder. And a number of us just kind of looked up and said, what? You know, pushing harder isn't going to change the nature of the Stick-It note or whatever. And, you know, I mean, I think I'm even the one who said, but the nature of the Stick-It note is so that it will come off. Pushing harder is never going to change the nature of the glue. We've got to come up with a different plan. And quite truthfully, he kind of insisted for a few minutes that if we just pushed harder, that it was going to work. And so when I was reading this lesson, I thought, oh my gosh, what a demonstration of that, because no pressure was ever going to change the nature of the glue on those seals. And there was no point. And, you know, if only we could get to our, you know, that point in our lives where we go, oh, the nature of this world is never going to bring us the happiness we're looking for. We've got to look someplace else.
Right. And really, that's exactly what Jesus said. That's a great analogy. And, you know, but yeah, just push harder. That's exactly what we try to do, right?
Oh, I do it all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just effort. I'm going to make this work. You know, I can somehow. And even when, you know, longtime students, we really, you know, we understand what the Course is saying. And we've really are trying to make the purpose of our lives a classroom and changing, you know, the purpose from rooting ourselves more deeply in the dream. We bought all that intellectually and you know, at times experientially. We still get so lost and trapped into believing that somehow, you know, we have to take care of all that. We have to first strive to make things work here, you know, and push harder, just try harder. And that kind of gets back to my point about, you know, really the way we try to like make ourselves whole first and ask Jesus second, you know, and let me try to solve this on my own first. And then, you know, and then once I've taken care of that, then I can ask for help. And I mean, you know, honestly, that's usually what brings us back to, for me, what brings me back to Jesus finally is catching myself in the pain of that process, you know, of trying to push harder. And it's just not working. You know, it's like we come back again and again to there has to be another way, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's when it's like I have to almost exhaust myself at times with trying to make it all work, including make the course work, you know, which means still somehow apparently thinking that it's going to work out somehow differently in form.
Right. Right.
You know? And I mean, it's so unconscious. It's so knee jerk. It's such a, you know, it's built into the thought system to just push harder, to just root ourselves more deeply in this dream. And, you know, that we're going in the wrong direction. And I mean, what's wonderful about this lesson is even so, no one can fail who seeks to find the truth. You know, somewhere in our mind, we have entertained the possibility that this is not what we want. Somewhere in our mind, we still hear that forgotten song calling to us, you know, and there, somewhere in our mind, as lesson 182 says, there is this small, still voice, you know, telling us that this is not our home, that we all feel alien here, you know, and we just that the only thing that is going to make us feel whole is to return to heaven. And, you know, we don't think that we can, that we're worthy of it again. And Jesus is saying, you know, none of this matters. None of what you're doing really matters. It's just a delay effort, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking lots of detours, but no one can fail who seeks to find the truth. And we have on some level, if we're really trying to practice this course, we are trying to find the truth. It's just that there's, you know, our mind is still split. And there's the more, you know, the ego does become retaliative and try and really, you know, we get very afraid. And so we go running back to our friend, the ego, and find ourselves even, you know, again, back in the dream, trying to deal with multiple problems that never get solved. And then we have to, you know, finally remember again, oh, wait a minute, this is not working. And, you know, that's part of the process. And there's part of me that just doesn't, you know, isn't ready to choose. I mean, that's how great my fear of this must be. But nonetheless, I, you know, I'll make it home. I mean, Ken was always very reassuring, and Jesus is always very reassuring that our awareness, our willingness to step back with him and just look at what we're doing and how it isn't serving us is that this practice will lead us home. And right now, you know, we this is a process and a journey, but we can still experience peace along the way right now, you know.
Mm-hmm.
We're not enlightened yet, but we, you know, even so, peace is available right now if we will just take his hand, you know, and just change our mind, be willing to open our mind to his perception.
Yeah. And you know what I want to ask you, I mean, and I don't want to make you too vulnerable here, but like you wrote me earlier in the week and you just said, yeah, I really want to do this lesson because I've just had all these feelings of I'm failing this course, mm-hmm. you know, and I could feel in those words that pain. Mm-hmm. I could just feel it in you. And I'm sorry for that, too. I don't want you to be in psychological, emotional pain. But I know that I've gotten letters recently from people just saying, well, this is going on and this is going on. So how do I change my mind? How do I do this? So I would ask you, you know, like, what does it feel like in your everyday life? Like you get up and you've got that pain in your jaw or you've got that pain in your back or you're worried about your daughter because of something going on with her. So what do you do? I mean, what is the processing, or what is it that you go through, good and bad, to get back to that place where you feel like, I am calling upon Jesus as my teacher?
Well, you know, I mean, I try to make a practice every day of the first thing that in the morning, you know, as soon as I wake up, trying to connect with that, with the presence of Jesus in my mind. And part of that is, at times I have to be very honest and say that that's just blind faith. It's not that I feel the presence of Jesus in my mind. I think when we most need to do that really is when we don't feel it.
Right.
You know? And like I said earlier, I think that that's what brings us back eventually, is the pain of trying to, you know, of when we've gone our own way again. And, you know, gone down another ego rabbit hole. of you know, thinking of really taking it very seriously, taking what's going on very seriously. You know, this, we were talking earlier about this kind of constant barrage of things that seems to be assaulting us out there, or endangering us, or you know, certainly robbing us of peace, and really, you know, just kind of, so asking every, in answer to your question, asking for that, to connect with that presence regardless. I mean, sometimes I feel when I'm in one of those states, of, it's more just, you know, help me to see everyone and everything as you do. And I ask a lot, help me to see myself, because I tend to judge myself really harshly. And I think a lot of us do, when I catch myself feeling, you know, bereft here, even though we're learning that we have this love and this presence within us, that's always available. And, you know, the pain that comes from the awareness that we must be choosing against that, because that's not what we're experiencing. You know, that is when, you know, I just surrender, I guess. I mean, it's not really a surrender of, it's just a letting go of the idea that, I guess the idea that it has to change, that I have to change what I'm experiencing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And because we want to feel better now, you know, and sometimes our resistance is such that we don't, and we have to be patient with that process. And it, what does help is, even when I am not feeling that presence, just the practice of in the morning and throughout my day, trying to remember it, connect with it, ask to see with it, is a practice of opening to it. And there will be some shift at some point, I find, but you know, and the shift is always, you know, it's not of this world. It is a peace that is okay with whatever's happening, is okay with everyone involved.
Right.
Which is not identified with anymore with the safety of the world or the body, which, you know, is a very, very precarious place to be placing our identity and happiness. And so, you know, I have enough of those experiences, however brief they may be, to know that that's all I want. You know, again, that contrast between how our awareness of how it feels when we're choosing against the love in our mind, when we're choosing for the ego thought system, when we're choosing the path of separate interests and vulnerability, and, you know, all of the tragic, we're taking it all very seriously. And the world is not a nice place, you know?
Right.
Part of this process is opening our eyes to that. And so there's bound to be, you know, sort of a at times, you know, we're horrified. But we have a principle within us, that presence within us that, you know, is reassuring us all the time that we can't fail. And, you know, I've mentioned this before on this program, but one of the very first, most reassuring things that struck me in the course was in the second part of the workbook introduction, where Jesus says, he gives us a little pep talk before we go on and says, you know, I am so close to you, we cannot fail. And that is the truth. We depart from that awareness constantly in our fear, but it doesn't go anywhere. So I guess in answer to your question, even though, my ego, I start listening to the ego again, and the ego loves to make us feel like we're failing this course. I mean, that's one of its, as we become more and more committed to the course, the ego becomes more and more retaliative at times and really wants to try to get in on the action and use the course kind of against us, empirically bring us again, always pointing to form. Yes, but look at this. Yes, but look at this, and how can you be peaceful with this happening? And how, and how can you say that this is working when all everything's going to hell, And so that kind of chatter never stops. But I think that over time, even when in states where you're taking it seriously and you're feeling like a failure with the course, there's an awareness that it's just my fear, and that there is that Jesus doesn't judge us, that there's no that I will find my way home. I mean, there is a faith that develops, a trust, really, that the course talks about, the development of trust that this process itself engenders, which is still palpable. It's like there's a bedrock underneath that you even though you're being sort of dramatic and melodramatic about the whole process, and complaining and all of it, there is a faith that this will lead me home, and none of what my theatrics really matters in the long run to Jesus. And his patience and his love for us is somehow palpable through the process. I don't know if that makes any sense, but that's the way it feels for me.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And just kind of tongue in cheek, but do you ever pull one of your own books off the shelf and reread a few things that you wrote?
Well, I no, but I mean, not really, unless somebody's asking me to read it. But it's funny that you should say that, because what does happen, and that makes me laugh, is like when I was editing my last book to for publication, and I was going, so I was editing and collecting all of the essays and putting them together, and then I go through and I, the truth is I haven't read some of these in a year and a half or 2 years or whatever. And so, yeah, I mean, sometimes, I read them and I'm like, wow, that, I mean, it's really helpful. And it's like, there's something, because they lead me back. Fortunately, somewhere Susan in those essays, disappears by the end. The ego finally gets out of the way, and there is the course's answer. It always ends with the course's answer, and that's not of us, so it can be comforting at times, because that does, and it also shows us very, it shows me very powerfully that this isn't a linear process. It's very, I've been here before. I've been in the quagmire of the ego plus system that just seems like we can't find our way out, and yet we do find our way out, and along the way healing is happening, and it's not, it's not linear. I mean, at some point we've all already chosen the atonement for ourselves. I mean, Jesus says that, Ken says that, so it's there. We just keep dreaming away from it. And so that's comforting too, that this, I mean, over time we try to judge ourselves so much. I mean, it's just a knee-jerk reaction, I think, of the ego, that we judge ourselves, and our fear. But healing is happening, and you over, if you take the long view of this, yeah, you're in a, you're, you know, you're back in a state of making it all real. But the course says, don't try to judge your own progress with this. Some of your deepest retreats into darkness are really your largest steps forward. And I'm paraphrasing that, but there's a section where it talks about that. And so we really, we don't have to. It's not helpful. We don't know. We don't know our own atonement path. We don't know what's in our best interest. something that looks very dire in our dream may actually be just what we needed to really choose. We don't know. We can't judge on form. And
right.
It doesn't mean that we have to have something, catastrophic happen, but whatever's in our dream is our curriculum. That's what's, that was what we are working with right now. And if our lives are a classroom, it isn't helpful to us to try to figure out why it's there. It's just helpful to us to try to practice what the course is saying, practice what the workbook says, just do what I'm asking you to do. And all that is to be in communication with me, to cultivate that new relationship with me as your teacher, to pay attention to how you're feeling and to work with me on it. And let's look at the real cause. And we'll do it slowly and we can do it gently. But we're the ones that don't want to be gentle because it's the brutality of what we think we did that we're constantly trying to make real.
Right.
Well, and I was thinking in this lesson too, here again, I'm paraphrasing, but just that idea that the ego really has pulled a veil over our eyes.
Right.
As long as we're in this kind of little dream, in this little, whatever this playhouse that we're, if you want to call it a playhouse, it's a fun house, all right, that we're in, we can't possibly see outside of that if we don't take a different teacher. If we don't ask for help to see it a different way, we're never going to, all the tools that we have within the illusion are not going to get us there.
Right, right. I love that image though, because, of the playhouse. And let me just preface it by saying, Jesus had said to Helen at some point, and I forget where it is in the course, and I'm paraphrasing this too, but he said, and I'm not so sure if I have the quote exactly right, but he said, "Don't ask me to take your fear away," because she was such a fearful person. And I'm a pretty fearful person too. I didn't start out that way, but the more I'm working with the course, the more I see that I'm a pretty fearful person. I really never thought I was before. But anyway, so he said, "Don't ask me to take your fear away. Ask me to help you with the conditions that led to your fear," which always involve a wish to be separate. And Ken said that in that particular message to Helen, he was talking about her fear of him,
mm-hmm.
To be separate from him, to push his love away and his guidance away. And so, but I had the playhouse image just triggered when I was in Temecula. This is again our fear of Jesus and our that's part of what the resistance is coming from, that fear, of going home, of taking his hand, of what healing would mean for me. And I was in Temecula attending a workshop when Ken was still alive a couple of years ago. And in fact, I think I might have mentioned this in the last interview that I did with him that's on my website, and I wrote a blog post about it. But I had this nightmare while I was, in my hotel room of, and it was like Pee-wee's Playhouse,
Uh-huh.
So I don't remember that, but where there was always all this stuff going on and weird stuff. And in the dream, Jesus was sitting on the desk of the hotel room. I woke up and he was there. And then I had this, and I was like, "I don't want you here. What are you doing here? Get out of here." And then I kind of slipped back to sleep and had this other dream where everywhere I went, it was like there was Jesus. So I would open doors. It was like a fun house,
Yes.
And there was Jesus. And he was like, popping out of, like a jack in a box out of something. And then I was like, just running away. And the final scene in that was I opened the refrigerator and it was like Pee Wee's Playhouse. And, there was Jesus among all of like the bananas, a miniature Jesus. And I was just absolutely terrified. I mean, I woke up, that shows us that we really are. We're very, very afraid of the course's answer. And, and why? Well, because what does it mean for me? We think that our person, we have to like, we're just going to go poof if we take Jesus's hand. And,
right.
And that's not the case. Really all we are going to let go of, all that's going to go poof is our specialness and our need for, our constant need to try to distinguish ourselves and defend ourselves and, you know, prove ourselves and separate ourselves from others and condemn others and feel victimized. All of that is what's going to go. And in its place, what's going to remain is, you know, a dawning, peaceful and welcome perception of our same need, you know, the need of every heart to find our way home and to take Jesus's hand to lead us there.
Right. Well, and you know what? I think that might be a good note to end on today. And I'm so glad we decided to make this a two-part discussion of Lesson 131, because in some ways I feel like we've barely scratched the surface. But we will get back together. Thank you for coming back next week. And we will continue to talk about Lesson 131. But as we leave the show today, do you have any announcements that you'd like to make?
You know, I always like to give a pitch for the Foundation for A Course in Miracles. And, you know, you can look at their website. And they are doing some wonderful classes now that they're streaming live. And so you don't have to go to Temecula. You can, you know, you can sign up. If you go to their website and look on Temecula classes, I think it's under, you can sign up to just watch these in the comfort of your own home and streamed live online. And so I highly recommend them. Rosemary and Jeff are doing, who are the staff teachers, are doing this just remarkable job and really teaching from the heart of their own experience and, you know, forgiveness practice. And the other thing I wanted to mention was just that keep an eye out, because there will be announcements. I'm going to be sending some out too, but later on from the foundation, about a new anthology that they're putting together. And it's a keepsake anthology of the Complete Lighthouse newsletter articles, including, it's called To Look Upon Darkness Through Light Must Dispel It. And it's by Ken and Gloria. And it includes all of the testimonials that were written, the very touching testimonials that were written when Ken died a couple of years ago, or a year and a half ago, whenever it was. And as well as some commentary, original commentary from Ken, a complete index. And it's supposed to be this beautifully bound book that, you know, a real treasure that everybody that really is a student of Ken's and a student of this course would probably love to have and be able to read these wonderful articles that he wrote over, you know, I don't know how, a decade at least, but maybe longer than that. And, you know, these really helpful essays that Ken wrote that, you know, were just wonderful for all of us. So that's coming out, and that announcement will be you know, be published sometime in October. And so keep an eye out for that, because it's a wonderful Christmas idea for people.
Great. Well, thank you for that. And how about you? Are you going to be at the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center anytime soon?
You know, I teach my Tuesday night class regularly, and then I will also be there. And I just, I lost the date. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it's October, Sunday, October 18th.
Okay.
I'll be leading the gathering. And yeah, so I'm doing a couple of other kinds of, helping with a couple of other classes there. But yeah.
So. Yeah. So for those of you who live in Denver or, you know, within driving distance of Denver, that's what we're talking about, the Rocky Mountain Miracle Center, where there are classes. Susan is there every Tuesday night, but there's always a gathering on Sundays. And oftentimes in the afternoon on Sundays, there will be a workshop. So if you're not on that website or on that mailing list, you ought to check that out too.
You know, there's one other thing on Sundays that they've started, and I teach once a month there, is a basics class that's at 9:15. And, and it's a good class. It's small, and it's really, you know, we just do a variety of whatever, leader, the teacher is feels called and prompted to do, but it really emphasizes the metaphysics of the course and, you know, forgiveness. It's a very core kind of class that's great for new people, but it's also great for, you know, people that just really want to ground themselves in the metaphysics of the course.
Yay. Well, thank you for that.
Sure.
All right. Well, any other announcements before we close today?
I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Well, Susan, thank you so much. And I will talk to you again next week.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thanks for making A Course in Miracles part of your day. If you'd like to find Susan, you can find her at www.forays, which is 4AYS in forgiveness. That's all one word, 4AYSinForgiveness.com. So thanks to everybody who listened today, and thanks for all of those who came into the chat room and participated that way, and thanks to our producer, Scott Weaver. And a special thanks to my mentor and friend, Mark Hussin, who makes 1-2 Radio possible and who certainly inspired this particular show. You can always find me on Tuesdays on my other show, Simple Tales, where we discuss one of my favorite illusions in the dream world, and of course that's astrology. I'm live every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 Eastern. Now, speaking of illusions, though, I would like to remind you that this weekend on Sunday evening, there's going to be a full moon lunar eclipse. That's going to be a total lunar eclipse, and this is the harvest moon, so I really think it's going to be spectacular. Now, depending on where you live in the world, you know, that's going to depend on whether or not you're going to see it. But for the most part, through the eastern United States, it should be very visible, depending on the weather, and through the western United States, at least part of it will be visible. So I would really encourage you to check that out. This is an illusion. It's part of our illusionary world, and it's also an illusion within the illusion, because of course what it'll look like, you know, that the moon is disappearing, or it'll make the moon look like it's red, because literally the earth comes in between the sun and the moon and throws its shadow on the moon. So it's going to be fabulous. I just know it is, and I personally am looking forward to it, so I wanted to remind you of that, and that is Sunday evening, September 27th. But for today, I hope you'll stick around and listen to the rest of our live programming. You've got about 5 minutes until the next show, which is Christine Demarier with The Through Line. Until next week, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to A Course in Miracles with C.A. Brooks and my guest, Susan Dugan, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way we think about life and spirituality, and hopefully we really are questioning, why wait for heaven?